Welcome to Now Appalachia, hosted by author and Appalachian resident Elliot Parker. This show profiles the authors and publishers that have connections to the Appalachian region and how those connections influence and impact their works. And now, Appalachia.
And hello, friends. We welcome you to another episode of Now Appalachia, heard here on the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I'm your host, Elliot Parker. It's great to have you with us for another episode of profiling the authors and publishers that have called Appalachia home or are writing about the Appalachian region and have connections to the Appalachian region in some way, and how that upbringing and how that experience influences and impacts their writing and what they are doing from a literary perspective. And we are delighted to have an outstanding journalist, an outstanding writer, and someone who I've known for a long time and so proud of and glad to have on the program today to talk to us about his new book. And it's a book that you really need to check out, particularly if you are an outdoor enthusiast or if you know someone who likes the outdoors or you know someone who is interested in that or is interested in visiting the state parks or has visited the state parks. And our guest today here on Now Appalachia is Connor Knighton. And Connor Knighton's new book is called Leave Only Footprints, My Acadia to Zion Journey Through Every National Park. And Connor Knighton, if you're familiar with that name, you probably have seen him on CBS Sunday Morning. He is a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning. He has also been a journalist who's had work featured on Current TV, as well as other networks. He is a native of Charleston, West Virginia. So he is Appalachian raised, born and raised. He's also been a contributing journalist to other television networks, including AMC and the Bio Channel, and has also provided commentary on other networks, including MTV, E, and CNN. And he has been to all of the national parks, and he's also visited probably what feels like 40% of the Hampton Inns that are located in our country. And so we'll talk all about all of that and his career at CBS as well. So, Connor, great to have you on the program. So delighted to have you here on Now Appalachia. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Good to get a chance to talk with you again.
Absolutely. Long time no see, and I'm so glad we got a chance to talk about this fantastic new book that really takes us inside every national park in our country. And before we get into some of the details about the book and some of the things that you profiled, I know that this book or the idea for this book kind of came from a personal nature or some sadness in your personal life, and it came from the ending of a relationship. You were engaged at one time and had a fiance. That relationship ended, and my understanding is the idea for this book kind of came out of that and kind of came as a part of trying to move on from that relationship. Can you talk about that and why it was the national parks that kind of popped into your mind as you were trying to get over that personal loss?
Yeah, so my friends had told me I needed a change of scenery. I overcorrected, I think, in that department. I'm sure they were not imagining that every national park in the country would be how I would heal from that the ending of that relationship. But, you know, I'd had this future laid out for me, and working in television, you often have a very uncertain future. I've had, you know, great gigs. I've been unemployed for, periods of time. But for this brief moment of time, I thought I knew exactly what my future held. You know, we had to save the dates we were about to send out. You know, we were inviting people. And then all of a sudden, you know, it turned out I wasn't engaged anymore. That was not my choosing and not something I saw coming. And so I was sitting around the house a lot trying to figure out what I needed to do to just move on. Work was kind of slow at that point. And I'd read a news article about how the next year was about to be the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service. So this is happening towards the mid end of 2015. 2016 was the 100th anniversary. And so at the time, I'd been doing some freelance reports for CBS Sunday Morning. And I thought, you know what, maybe that's the rare kind of show on TV where we might actually air a piece about the national parks. Maybe a few pieces about the national parks. And so then I concocted this crazy, it's the most absurd email I've ever sent to a boss who's like barely even my boss. He's a guy who would like occasionally put me on TV. And I was like, okay, here's what I want to do. And basically, I'm going to do this whether you say yes or not. I want to try and see if I could possibly hit every national park in a year. And I looked at the list, and at the time, there were 59 national parks, barely doable in a year, but potentially doable. There's 8 in Alaska, 9 in California, 1 in the Virgin Islands. So it would take a full year of doing it. But I decided that, like, I just needed to shake things up. And that's the crazy idea I cooked up. I asked if they would be interested in some pieces from them. And it took them a while to debate that. They certainly didn't need a piece from every park, nor could they have aired them all year long. There wouldn't have been enough weeks in the year. But some of the parks, maybe a third. He was like, okay, yeah, I think we could get into that. And so I decided to just pick up the rest on my own. So I did some of these for work. The other two-thirds I did on my own time and my own dime, I funded partially through the money I was making from work and partially through not paying rent anymore. I gave up my place in LA, put my stuff in storage, all the things I would have needed to do anyway. I didn't want that couch anymore that we had shared. You know, I wanted it all gone. And so I sort of separated myself from that life and headed to Acadia National Park on New Year's Day to kick off this journey. Never really admitting to myself, at least, that it was a book. So it wasn't like I did this thing to write a book. I did this thing because I needed to do it. And then at the end of that year, I realized that there may be a book in that. And so then that's where the writing of it commenced, was after the journey had concluded.
And you explore all 59 of the national parks that are located in the United States and surrounding territories. And I wanted to ask you about one quote that you had in your book, which I really thought was interesting. And it really explains kind of your view of the national park system and sort of the beauty and the brilliance that exists within the national park system. And you write at one point, each one is an example of how we have fought against our selfish, destructive impulses. Can you tell us a little bit about what you mean by that and the context sort of behind that quote?
Yeah. I mean, it's counterintuitive, right? Like to what happened in other countries was that, you know, the big trees were cut down for lumber, the animals were killed for food, you know, and the most beautiful sites in Europe in particular were privately owned. You know, it was the rich people bought them up and only they had access to those views. And so the US did it differently. And by the way, all those terrible things were all happening here too. But this idea that like maybe we should save some of this for everyone was a uniquely American idea. Now there's national parks in countries all across the world. But Yellowstone was the very first of anywhere in the world. And so as that idea to sort of preserve these spots for no other good than just like a social emotional good. There's not there are no resources that we're extracting from these parks. I think I mentioned that quote in a chapter about trees. And it's because like the redwoods, the sequoias, and by the way, like, I grew up in a house made of wood. I mean, like, you know, we some of this stuff is fine, but like, you know, what was called then the magnificent monarchs of the forest, these mighty sequoias and redwoods. I think when folks saw those, they realized that like there is a better use for this than just consumption. And that really is the story of every park, that there is a better use for it than exploiting that land or in killing those bison or whatever it might be. You can find a version of that story in every park.
One of the things I also like about your book is there is sprinkles of humor that are put into this, which I think are so much fun and really add a lot of levity to it. And just as an example, and I highlighted this one, was something that you mentioned when you were talking about, I believe this was California's White Mountains, and you were talking about this idea of age in terms of age on the inside and age on the outside. And you wrote, age on the inside isn't always apparent on the outside. Just ask Keanu Reeves, which I thought was a great quote. And there are so many little snippets of that in there. Can you talk about putting humor into your story and what you felt like as a writer that added to the description of these national parks as you were taking us around to them and explaining them to us?
Sure. I think in that quote specifically, I'm talking about the oldest tree in the country, which is harder to determine than the largest tree. Largest is just, you just look up what thing stretches higher than everything else. That's the tallest. What thing's bigger around? That's the largest. Oldest is a little harder to determine. But I think, you know, I'm not a botanist. I'm not a geologist. And so the stories that like would stick with me and also that I enjoy telling I found humor is a better way to do that. You know, it's not a there are far better textbooks, you know, about the parks than this is. There are far better guidebooks than this book is. This is, you know, my take on them. And sometimes that's a humorous take. Sometimes it's a more reflective, thoughtful take. But I had for years worked on this show at Current TV, a channel nobody has ever seen. But that was a comedic news show. It was in the vein of like a Daily Show or a Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. So that's the world I come from. So it's only natural for me to like put some of that in there. There are some hits and misses for sure. There are definitely some jokes that only I like that my editor was like, this is not funny. This is the world's worst pun. And I fought for. So I'm glad that a few of them landed with you. I'm sure there are just as many that did not.
Fantastic. Connor Knighton is our guest here on Now Appalachia. He's a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning, and we're talking to him about his new book, Leave Only Footprints, My Acadia to Zion Journey Through Every National Park. And Connor, we'll come back to your book in just a second, but I wanted to ask you one question that some of our listeners may be interested in, or if they are aspiring journalists themselves or know somebody in their family who is an aspiring journalist. How did you get to CBS Sunday Morning? How did you get there from your career, starting out working for those other networks, to getting to CBS and getting to CBS Sunday Morning? And I also understand you have an interesting story in terms of a discussion you had with Charles Osgood about your book. And Charles Osgood was a longtime former host of CBS Sunday Morning. So how did you get to CBS, and what did you and Charles Osgood talk about in terms of your book?
Yeah, so I was a fan of Sunday Morning long before I was a correspondent on it. I think it's a show that, because it has this long history, it's been on for so long. I think it's a lot of people's parents' favorite show. And so that's kind of how they introduce it. So I was certainly, and maybe even still, am not exactly in like the average demographic, which skews a little bit older for Sunday Morning. But it's one of those shows that different generations can watch together. That's how it was with my family. I had come to New York years ago and had a meeting with, at the time, the new head of CBS News, who had recommended that I talk with Sunday Morning. And it's a process. It's a show that a lot of people want to be a part of. And so they have no shortage of applicants. And so they tested me with a couple of different pieces here and there where I would do a commentary for them and be thrilled. I mean, those 3 minutes would be the 3 minutes that were seen more than anything else I would do all year on a lot of these smaller channels. But it only became a full-time job with this park project, and it's remained that ever since. I think that the Osgood story you're asking about is, at one point throughout that year, it was the year he retired, was the year that I was on this journey. And so I was like, well, I'm not going to miss that. So I flew back to New York for like 2 nights from whatever bit of wilderness I'd been in the days before. And he just looked at me, and like, we had this whole thing, a cake and a staff party and all that stuff for him. And he's like, oh, so you do own a suit. I was like, yes, because all year long, like news is a kind of buttoned up business. And I had been exclusively in like cargo pants and like, you know, hiking shirts and sweaty. And so I dressed up for him, as I should have. He commands that respect. Actually, we all wore bow ties that night in a tribute to him. But I think he almost did not recognize me, I think, from seeing me so disheveled so much of the time. But that's kind of remained my beat for them. I'm happy to be CBS's chief cargo pants correspondent. So I've tried to continue to do more nature-y segments.
I love that. And I love what Osgood said. And I love that you, we're now going to forever think of you as CBS's cargo shorts correspondent.
That's fine. There's plenty of other suits on air. So
you've been to all of these places. I know you've been all over the world as a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning. You're from West Virginia originally. You and I grew up in Charleston, same town and same state. Despite the fact you've been all over the world, when you look back at growing up in West Virginia, being from Appalachia, what are some thoughts that you have? What are some memories that you have about that experience of growing up in West Virginia, kind of right in the heart of Appalachia?
Well, I mean, that was my introduction to nature. You know, they weren't national parks, but they were state parks. They were Kanawha State Forest, Hawk's Nest, where I was lucky to have parents who wanted to introduce me to the outdoors. We would go camping. I mean, even if they weren't camping trips, if you walked outside of where I grew up in North Charleston, like you were in the woods. I mean, it was just, there were deer that would run through our yard. And so that gave me this appreciation for nature early on. And I think that it's just a sensibility. I mean, everything from like the teachers I had growing up who, you know, pushed me to the library, helped me to read. I have such fond memories of the Kanawha County Library. I mean, I think a lot of that just turned me into the person I am. In terms of the park specifically, I'll never forget a trip we took that actually took me away from West Virginia. But when I was 14, I got on the plane for the first time, went to Yeager Airport. We flew to do a family trip out west and did the Grand Canyon, Bryce, and Zion. And the fact that that looks so different than everything I knew in West Virginia, realized sort of how big and vast the world was. And they're pretty in different ways. But that, I think it just, I mean, that looks like Mars as far as I can tell. And so that I think for my little kid brain, I was like, oh, wow, there's the beautiful mountains and the fall colors I know at home. And there's this red rock out in Utah. Like, I need to go explore all of that. So, but you know, it's I'll always have a soft spot for the hills and mountains of home.
We're talking with Connor Knighton about his new book, Leave Only Footprints, My Acadia Design Journey Through Every National Park. And Connor is the Sunday morning correspondent, or a Sunday morning correspondent, for CBS Sunday Morning. So, Connor, I want to ask you about putting this book together, because you went and saw so many things and you saw all 59 national parks and did a lot of traveling. How did you go about putting this book together? I know you kind of organized it into sections instead of chapters. Can you talk a little bit about that strategy, and how did you manage to get all of this information, all of your impressions and images and thoughts, kind of organized into a manuscript?
Yeah, well, that's what was both the greatest strength of the book could have potentially been its greatest weakness. I mean, if I'm being completely honest, when I did decide to go to all of them, maybe I thought, maybe that will be a book one day. I mean, I didn't know. I'd never written a book, so it's kind of an arrogant thought to have. But certainly, guy that goes to half of the parks, who cares? Guy that goes to all the parks, at least that's a premise. So, but that means I also have to deliver on that premise. And so, you know, there couldn't be any duds. And truthfully, like, of all the parks, some are more interesting than others, and some deserve more pages than others. And so I couldn't skimp on that. With most books, I think when you're writing them, if something's not working or you don't like it, then you cut it. But like, I couldn't really cut anything. So the challenge was making sure I've got a killer story about Congaree National Park in South Carolina that is equal to the story I've got at Great Sand Dunes in Colorado. With a book like this, there were sort of two more obvious ways to structure it, I think. One would be chronological. That's how something like a wild or a walk in the woods starts, where it's the beginning, middle, and end of a specific journey. I kind of thought that in my case, the way I did this, that would ultimately be more confusing, because the true chronology of my journey is very confusing, because I was chasing different stories that I needed to air for work. I went to Washington State 3 different times because different things were happening at different points of the year that I wanted to talk about and be there for. But I think from a reader's perspective, if you're at like chapter 11, you're like, wait, what? He's back in Washington again? Like, what's the, like, chronology seemed the wrong way to do it. Geography also seemed the wrong way. And ultimately what I landed on was thematically. And to me, that's the greatest advantage of seeing all of the parks and not just some of them, is that you're really able to see these threads that tie them together. And so only because I had this completest kind of a year am I able to look back and say, oh, like Lake Clark National Park in Alaska and Yosemite National Park in California both had lessons to teach me about spirituality. Mesa Verde in Colorado and Great Smoky Mountains in Tennessee, 2 parks that look nothing alike. Geographically, they're over 1,000 miles apart, but like, they both had a story of home that I thought was very prominent in those parks. So I would draw those themes out, and hopefully from a reader's perspective, certainly from my perspective, that was a more rewarding way to structure it, because then you're really able to see it from that big picture viewpoint.
Excellent. Very good. I want to ask you also about a section of your book that caught my attention, and that is when you were talking about glaciers and you visited some of the parks that had glaciers, and you write pretty descriptively and vividly about the disintegration of those glaciers. And I know you mentioned earlier, you know, you're not a scientist, not a geologist, but I wanted to ask you this question about climate change and observing that. You've seen all of these parks and these natural wonders in our country. What are your thoughts on climate change? We hear so much about this back and forth in the media, and some pundits say it's worse than we think it is. Some say it's not as bad as we think it is. Some people say, well, you know, I'm going to be dead by the time it really hits a critical mass anyway, it won't matter. But based on what you've seen, and you write about this again in the book about the glaciers that you observe in the parks with glaciers, your thoughts on climate change, is it overblown, underblown? Where do you think we are in terms of just in our country having a discussion on the impact climate change is having on some of our national parks and these things that you've observed.
Sure. So I think it's maybe best to begin that with a quote that was said by the former director of the National Park Service, who was at the time I was going through these parks, the current director, John Jarvis, who said that climate change is fundamentally the greatest threat facing the integrity of our national parks that we've ever seen. So it's not, you know, people poaching the bison, or it's not big business crowding in. It is climate change. And there is not a park that is immune from its effects. So Glacier is an example I use in the book because you don't need to be a scientist to figure that one out. I mean, you could just see it with your own eyes. I went out with this photographer who was taking pictures of where the ice used to be. So he would hold up this image from sometimes just 30 years ago, sometimes 100 years ago, but there would be tons and tons of ice that had disappeared. Within our lifetime, within the next 10 years perhaps, Glacier National Park will have no more glaciers. And that is irreversible. I don't know if anybody who might be climate change deniers, I don't see how you could deny that that is happening. Go look, in 10 years, no more glaciers. The parks in Alaska have much more ice. I mean, it's not going to disappear, but like you would see that happening there. And then a Joshua Tree in California, you know, a hot, dry desert, climate change is having its impact there, where maybe the Joshua trees won't exist anymore. It's a more difficult, I think the reason the photographs work so well at Glacier is because you can see it. A lot of these other impacts are much subtler. Air pollution is subtle. Light pollution, which isn't really climate change, but like that is subtle. I think that discussion, I mean, it's ramping up. It's encouraging to see more people talking about it. I mean, the more it encroaches on your way of life and your community, the harder it is to pretend it's not happening, whether that's a village getting, you know, flooded or, I mean, it's just, there's a thousand different ways that this is happening. And honestly, I could have written a whole book about that. There probably are books about that. But to me, it's just something worth keeping in mind that like the work is not done to saving the land was maybe, you know, it was the most important thing to do early on. But now that that's mostly taken care of and we've said, all right, these are places that we're preserving, it's worth thinking about how do we continue to make sure they survive and thrive with the actions that we're doing outside of the park. So nothing that's happening inside the park is really impacting them on a climate change level. It's the human activity outside of it. And so it's just worth keeping in mind while still enjoying these places. I mean, that's also true for our cities. So it's not a unique problem to the parks. It's just a little bit more obvious because they're laboratories in a way where you can take a look at one species, see how they're interacting with another. So,
and one of the key takeaways I had from your book too, or one of the key themes I found, is that you really do a great job through, you know, through humor and through history and little tidbits about each park. Help us see that all of our 59 national parks are just as diverse and just as different as the geography of our country, the makeup of our country. And that was really something that I hadn't thought about when I was reading the book, but as I finished it, I was thinking about that because you really touch on how every park is unique and different, and it kind of parallels our country in terms of how diverse and different we are. Is that something you expected to see when you were going throughout your journeys, or is that something when you were putting everything together into a manuscript, you realized, oh, wow, you know, these parks do represent the makeup demographically of our country? Talk a little bit about that, and did you have that realization, or was that something you wanted to emphasize in the book? How did all that come together?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was on that journey, basically, I mean, 4 years ago today, I was in these parks, you know, and it was an election year then, a very divisive election year, and I think what I was able to see, I had friends who were campaign reporters, so they were crisscrossing the country in their own way. But you know, when I'm staying in Alamosa, Colorado, or I don't know, Gatlinburg, Tennessee, or just towns all across the country, like you really are getting a perspective. I think friends of mine who only were hanging out in West Hollywood in California had a very different perspective on what was happening that year than seeing the country. But that's more. I mean, that's a political look at it, where you get to sort of see the variety of viewpoints and lifestyles, but also just like the diversity of people, communities. There's no right or wrong way to experience a park. I'd say the parks probably aren't as diverse demographically as they could or should be. That's something I address in the book, where you know, there's they are for all Americans. I don't think all Americans experience them equally. So it's trying to increase that access. But yeah, I mean, you know, America is a beautiful collection of different people and viewpoints, and the parks are like that, you know, except mirrored more through scenery, I guess, you know, but like, it's just crazy that they're all in the same country. You know, you go to, you know, there are certain countries where like, it kind of all looks the same, but like the fact that the Everglades and Wrangell St. Elias in Alaska and the Great Smoky Mountains and the rocky shores of Acadia, that those all exist in the same country is bonkers. It's still, I've seen them all, and it's still weird. And by the way, there are now 62 national parks. There were 59 when I did it, but they've added a few. So White Sands in New Mexico, Indiana Dunes, south of Chicago. I mean, it's a constantly evolving idea and system. I'm grateful for the perspective that it gave me on the country and the pride in the country too. There's something, I've seen beautiful places all across the world, but there's something about knowing that these are our lakes and mountains and rivers and seashores. We're like, you see it, and not that I did anything particularly to protect them except pay my taxes, I guess, but you're like, all right, that's mine. I like that. I can get into it. So, I definitely feel that, which is probably why I feel that even more so with West Virginia. I think anyone from West Virginia has got like maybe an outsized amount of pride of what West Virginia has, and I'm guilty of that too. But it's like, yeah, this is you know, this is great. The Kanawha River is the best river in the world. Like, is it? Who knows? But, you know, you love what's yours. You love you feel pride in that, and so I'm now able to feel that with the entire country. So
that's awesome. That's great. So, are you working on another book? And if you are, give us a little hint as to what that is and what that might be. And if you're not, what are some of the things you're going to be tackling on CBS Sunday Morning, let's say in the next months ahead, that we can be looking out for? Or you can tell us both if you're doing both.
Yeah, well, so for Sunday Morning, it's a very challenging time for us as a show, just to do the types of stories that we would typically do. You know, because we're a national show, because we have a large audience and a decent budget, we're able to do a lot of travel for the show. None of that's happening right now. I mean, it's a lot of Zoom interviews. It's a lot of sort of repackaging, or I mean, also trying to be relevant too. I think a lot of what people come to us for is like the quirky story of the guy who owns 1,000 locomotives in Nebraska or whatever. And like, there's a time and place for that. And we've worked some of that into the broadcast, but also like, we can't have our head in the sand and ignore the story that everyone is talking about, which is the pandemic, you know? And so it's sort of finding the Sunday Morning angle on that. So I just shot a piece that'll hopefully air this upcoming Sunday on how zoos are coping right now. When you, like lots of businesses, they've closed down and movie theaters, whatever, but like when you close a bookstore, the books are still fine. When you close a zoo, what happens to the hippos? You know, like, well, who's feeding the animals? So I think that's the Sunday Morning perspective on that. So I've been focusing on that, which continues to be my job. The book is a side thing that I did once and may do again. I kind of wish I had a better idea for a book right now, because now's the perfect time to write it, right? Like if everyone had to stay inside in April of May of last year, I think I might have welcomed it, because that's what I was doing and should have been doing anyway. And I would have wanted everybody to tough it out with me and not distract me by making me leave and procrastinate. So I feel like I would have benefited from some quarantining a year ago. Now I've got all the time to write. I just, you know, I'm cracking that idea. But the response has been really nice to the book. And also I learned a lot writing this, that almost just to maximize that knowledge, I would be much better at this the second time around. I mean, hopefully the finished product is good, but I just know my process, which was a disaster. I mean, whether it's just like the way I organize my research or the procrastination, like if I could go back to 2016 me, I would have asked him to take way more notes and take a picture of that park sign, even if you feel like a dork taking it in the museum, because you're going to want to know what it said. So I actually had to do a lot of legwork to go back and re-research things I probably should have internalized the first time. So for that reason, and many more, also because I think it's fun, I'd like to not do a second one, but no, I don't have I'm not being cagey. I for real do not have a second book sitting ready to go, but I'd hopefully soon. I actually had some discussions with my agent about that this week, about potentially doing another one. Because yeah, luckily people seem to be enjoying this, and so I'd like to do another one if people want to read it. So
that's great, fantastic.
Although no more every national park. I got to think of something more manageable.
Yes.
Maybe like
not going to every XYZ whatever it is.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, or if it is, it's got to be like I'll go to every Tudor's Biscuit World in Kanawha County or something. But I need to narrow the focus a little bit, or else I'm just going to go crazy.
Absolutely. So Connor, in our final moments with you today, if someone wants to get in contact with you to talk to you about the book or about your process and putting it together, how can they get in contact with you? Where can they find you out in the social media universe? And also, where can they get copies of your book?
So to find me, I'm on Twitter and Instagram, just as my name, Connor Knighton, C-O-N-O-R. I've got a website as well, ConnorKnighton.com. These are all very creatively named. so you could find me there. And then the book, sadly, most bookstores are closed, and depending on when you're listening to this, maybe some of them will have opened back up, but it's online everywhere. It's, you know, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Books A Million. And then also, chances are your favorite local bookstore has a website. Taylor Books in Charleston, West Virginia, for years did not have a website, never, as far as I know. And then within the last couple of months, they've started up one in conjunction with, I believe it's bookshop.org. So if you're looking to support your local store, and I would encourage you to, because I know they could use your support right now, you can always buy through them. And honestly, I think that's a faster way to get it in your hands. Amazon is deprioritizing book sales in favor of like cereal and toilet paper. And I get it. They should be doing that, I guess. But places that just sell books are a better bet for getting it shipped. So yeah, you can find it online anywhere.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Connor Knighton has been our guest here today on Now Appalachia. He is the correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning, and he's the author of the outstanding new book, Leave Only Footprints, My Acadia to Zion Journey Through Every National Park, a trip through all 59 of our national parks with outstanding history, tidbits, descriptions, and a little bit of humor thrown in there as well. Connor, it's a fantastic book for anybody who's wanting to learn more about our national parks or has been to some of the national parks or is thinking about going to the national parks. It's really a great insight and an incredible journey that you take us on. So congratulations on the book. Thanks so much. Good talking to you, and thanks for coming on Now Appalachia. And if you get something else published here in the next year or two, we'd love to have you back on to talk about it. So thanks so much for being on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And we also want to say, as we finish up this episode of Now Appalachia, we want to thank Connor for joining us, as always, and encourage you to pick up a copy of his book at your local independent bookstore, if possible, or anywhere that you like to buy books. It's called Leave Only Footprints, My Acadia Design Journey Through Every National Park. We also want to take a moment to say thanks to the executive producer of Now Appalachia. Her name is Pam Stack. She is responsible for all of the behind-the-scenes technical aspects of our program each and every episode here, making sure everything gets recorded correctly and timely and getting all of that information promoted and disseminated to you, our listeners. So we appreciate all the work that she does behind the scenes. We also want to remind you, this is a copyrighted podcast that is owned and operated by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. So until next time, I'm your host, Elliot Parker. Stay well and see you someplace soon, I hope.
You've been listening to Now Appalachia. This is a copyrighted podcast owned and operated by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Stay tuned. More outstanding podcasts are coming your way next. Stay tuned for more outstanding podcasts from the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network.